patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Hello and welcome to Long Toss, everybody. Episode 208. This is the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, normally joined by the best co-host in the biz, who runs the ship normally on Long Toss, Adam Mack, but he is busy tonight. So I am taking the helm, but we have four incredible panelists that we will introduce in just a second here. Lots to talk about tonight on the show. It might not be all that positive. I know in the chat, it's already oozing negativity. And how can it not? It has been a rough little stint here. Four losses in a row. 1-6 in the last seven against AL East competitors. And I mean, my God, you throw in Boston to that and they're 1-10 against the AL East in the last 11 games that they've played them. They went 3-16 with runners in scoring position today. It has been an abysmal time to be a Toronto Blue Jays fan over the last about week and a half here. So we are going to get into it. We're going to break down this Jays and Orioles series. We are going to get to this brutal slump and talk whether maybe an injection from the minor league system might be in order to do anything, something with this team. Brandon Belt, he has looked hot. He's one of the only guys on this team hitting, but are we convinced he's the lefty this lineup needs? We'll dig into that. Your dream batting order. So we'll go around all the panelists. Something has to happen here. The Blue Jays aren't scoring, and maybe a shakeup amongst the lineup is the way to go here. The Yankees can't stop, won't stop cheating. Clark Schmidt caught with stuff on his hands. Of course, we watched against the Blue Jays Domingo Germán get ejected. So we are going to talk that, and then we'll do a look around the AL East and get to everyone's topics. Okay. Thank you, everybody in chat. I know that was a long intro. Thank you to our panelists. We are going to introduce, of course, our stalwarts, our everyday veterans of the show, Baseball Jen. Jen, thank you for joining us again. Outside of the Blue Jays, how are you doing today?
I mean, it's a good thing I'm already dead inside. So that's how I get through the season. I'm doing well. It's, you know, sunny weekend here in Toronto, so that's lovely. But as for the baseball, really should have gone outside today instead of stayed in and watched.
We all should have been outside today. Welcome back to the show, Garth, at Garth Yorgi on Twitter. Buddy, always a pleasure to have you. How's things been?
Good. It's been a little while since I've been on. I was 2 weeks ago, I wasn't on for some reason. Then last week I was sick. So it's been a while. It's good to be back.
Fishing. You were fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally back on the lake. Pretty busy with that. And then this was my opening weekend for the new vintage clothing shop that I opened. So
that's right, buddy. Congrats on that, by the way.
Thanks.
Edmonton-based comedian and Long Toss veteran. We haven't had him on since last season. Glad to have you back. Sean LeCombre, welcome back, buddy.
Great to be here. I'm an elite boar, you know?
Well, I see you've gone out of your way to not wear your Baltimore Orioles hat, and we appreciate it.
No, I always liked the Orioles and the Jays both for some reason, but I mean, I'm way more of a Jays fan. It's not like I watch Orioles games or whatever. Like, I just hated the Red Sox and the Yankees so much that any team in the AL East against them, I cheered for.
Well, it's good to have you back, buddy. And from the Taggart and Torrance podcast, and for two decades, he manned the drums with Our Lady Peace. Jeremy Taggart, welcome to the show, buddy. So glad to have you on, man.
How's it going? Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here, and great to see everybody. Good times.
Well, Jeremy, next time you're on, buddy, we'll make sure that maybe it's during a winning streak, because this might get downtrodden at times. But we'll dig in here. Let's start with you, Jen. It has been four losses in a row for this Blue Jays team. Where are you at?
This team doesn't look good. I mean, it does not look like a good team right now. Nothing is clicking. And sure, they are a good team on paper, and I am sure they will run up against a hot streak at some point, because in a 162 game season, you're bound to have several of those. But right now, they look like a bad baseball team. It's one thing to have guys go cold at the plate, but it's another thing when you're beating yourself, you know, like bad base running, for instance, or, you know, just swinging at pitches that are nowhere near the strike zone and getting fooled on, you know, an 89 mile an hour fastball, like just absolute silliness, a lot of it. And I think that's the most frustrating point is that you're seeing, you know, really good players playing really poorly. And you know, all of these things get magnified when you're also doing the little things poorly as well. So that's where I'm at right now. And, you know, I'm sure, as I said, you know, at some point there'll be these hot streaks coming, but that doesn't mean anything about the other teams slowing down, does it? Right. You know, at some point, how big of a lead is too big to overcome? And I'm not really sure where the help is going to come from with this team. And you know, that Schneider blunder on, what was it, Saturday night, yesterday,
yeah.
Not realizing how many mound visits there had been, and then having to pull Manoah early, and everything fell apart from then. That just feels like a microcosm of this current stretch.
For a team whose mantra was attention to detail going right into this season, to see it top to bottom just be as sloppy as it has been in the last couple of weeks, it's pretty disappointing. I mean, it starts at the manager and it goes down throughout the lineup here. I know, even if you look at the guys who are as consistent as they normally come, guys like Vladdy, right? I mean, you look at his home road splits, it is embarrassing. He's hitting 231 at home. He has zero home runs yet. Zero home runs out of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Garth, I'm curious what your opinion was of watching John Schneider forget that Pete Walker had already been out to the mound. Are we blowing this out of proportion, or is this truly one of those things that it's like, again, top to bottom, things have got to tighten up?
Well, I mean, like, there's only 30 of these jobs, right? Like, to be an MLB manager, there's only 30 guys that get to do that job every year. And like that's your job. Like, how can you go in and look your players in the eye and tell them what they need to be doing when you completely shit the bed on that? You know, like it you can't, those things can't happen, man. Like that's, I don't even want to say that's minor league shit, because people in the minor leagues get paid to do this. Like, it's your job, dude. Like, I don't know, like, bring a fucking chalkboard or something into the, you know, like, do whatever you need to do, man. But it's like, they brought him in because they thought he would be a little harder on the players and like hold them more accountable, because Montoya was everybody's friend. And, you know, I don't know, man, like it's just unacceptable. I mean, that's the only word I can think of for a major league manager who has worked his way up and, you know, clawed his way through the organization to get where he is, to just like, and this isn't his only like bonehead play, like managerial decision he's made this season. Like, he's made a few, but that was just like unacceptable.
I actually took a look at, by the way, Charlie Montoyo was fired July 14th of last year, just going into the All-Star break. So John Schneider has been at the helm of this team for not even a year. It's about 10 months now. And I cannot find throughout baseball history anywhere where a manager has been fired and then the next year midseason, another manager has been fired. Sean, do you see John Schneider going anywhere, or is he the manager until at least the offseason?
No, he's not going anywhere. I mean, right. I don't think Atkins and Shapiro are built that way. Like, I don't think they even wanted to move on from Montoya when they did. I don't think that was, you know, it wasn't like a natural progression to go from Montoya to him. I just think, you know, I think I've said it before on this podcast that I just don't think they're a real communications, telecom communications, PR driven sort of team. And I don't think they liked the way Montoya communicated. I just don't think they liked, you know, like if somebody, hey, this pitcher was bad today, he'd be like, yes, he was bad. He was terrible today. You know, like, I don't think they moved on from Montoya because they hated his communication. I don't think they're moving on from Schneider. Like, they love the way he communicates. He's very open with the press, but he doesn't tell them too much. He doesn't say anything bad about the players. He just kind of rolls with it. So he's not going anywhere. So even if this year ends up being like a disaster, I don't think he goes anywhere.
So if, and I mean, this is a lot of speculation here, but I'm curious what you think, Jeremy, on if for some reason things don't work out. And let's just say in the worst case scenario, this team just misses out on the playoffs come the off season. It's probably not just John Schneider that gets canned. Like, do you see Ross Atkins on the hot seat a little bit here, Jeremy?
Well, I think what I've seen as a non-analyst and not trying to be specific with the people and specific things involved, but it seems to me that the honeymoon is clearly over and there's no confidence there. And the only way to gain confidence at this point is to win ball games. And that's not happening either. So that's just what happens when you're in this position. Yeah. He's on too early. They'll look like fools if they get rid of him now, you know what I mean? At this point, they have to ride it out. And hopefully, I think it's one of those things when you bring in somebody and it's a different personality and the players are respecting it in the beginning. And this is where that happens. Like, they're just at that point where something goes wrong and you can't fix everything. So you do actually have to rely on the players sometimes for a team to play together, you know. And it seems right now that all the best players seem to be in kind of a slump in a way where things just aren't working. And that just the finger always comes right back to the coach. And I think that's the situation we're under. It's either going to get way worse or things are going to start to click and they're going to, you know, because if you look at how many spectacular ball players there are on this team, it really, you just have to get them to play together properly. And right now that's not happening.
Honestly, that is such a great point, Jeremy, about what a bad look it is on the organization to do something like fire their manager 10 months after hiring it. Cause it really does point to the fact that they made a horrible decision. So if that's the case, then, and I'll go back to you here, Jen, if John Schneider is the problem, he has the rest of the season in rope. But if they get to the end of the season, it's probably both Atkins and Schneider that's gone and they start over. Because let's face it, there is Don Mattingly sitting there as their bench coach, experienced manager, known as Donnie Baseball, right? And then you also have the World Series winning general manager as your special assistant, just sitting there in your organization in James Click. It's almost like they have backup plans.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any chance they move on from Schneider during the season. No matter how far south this goes, he is an organizational guy. He is the person that they wanted to promote to this position all along, I believe. Montoya was a stopgap. And I think Schneider was always sort of that long-term plan. So he's not going anywhere. I could potentially see someone like Guillermo Martinez, the hitting coach, being fired mid-season if the bats don't turn it around. That I absolutely could see happening. Maybe the bullpen coach, perhaps, if the bullpen doesn't kind of get it together. But if they actually miss the playoffs this season, I really do think, and I was thinking about this before we even came on today, so before you even asked the question, I think it's very reasonable that Ross Atkins and maybe even Shapiro are out the door, because they built this team and then they've tinkered with this team and they have not been able to get anywhere with it whatsoever. And if you also, assuming the organization does want to sign Vlad and or Bo long term, and that hasn't been done, right? I think you're looking at it and how are you keeping them around if they miss the playoffs at the end of this season? That's the way I see it. And I do not want to make, I'm going to, I hate making the lazy comparison to hockey, but we just saw what happened with the Leafs, mm-hmm. right? They took their architect and, you know, great team on paper, not so great when it counted, and they sent their architect packing. So I think that could very easily happen here. Really, I really do.
Now, I agree 100% with you, Jen. I am going to push back a little bit on the Shapiro. I do believe that, especially with these renovations going down and him at the helm, that he gets another chance. So I feel like Charlie being fired was Atkins' chance. And I don't think he gets another one. So I don't think he gets to roll through managers here. I think the buck kind of stops at him at the end of this season.
Yeah, that's a really fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think it is interesting that they have such qualified candidates in-house ready to go if that is the case. So let's, and listen, I know that we have
just. I love how Shapiro gets off the hook because the outfield looks pretty.
Yeah, well, also, Sean, he joined us on the walk-off, so we give him a free pass here. Okay.
I was wondering why you were like, look, Shapiro, that the seat he's on couldn't be colder.
And the other thing is if you want to keep the great players, you know, you don't want all of a sudden front office moves happening. That's going to make them look at other opportunities and leaving even more as well, right?
Very true, because a front office does want to put their stamp on any organization that they kind of come in and take over. Let's try and be slightly positive here, because this is a very good team. And if you just zoom the microscope out a little bit, this team is 3 games over .500. It is May 22nd. I know the chat is going to hate this spiel I'm about to give here. I know everyone in the chat is already saying they're not even a wild card team. They're out. It's done. I honestly believe this team is still very much a playoff team, still a very, very good team. Sean, you've watched enough baseball in your life, 162 game seasons. We watched the offense dry up last year and they pulled out of it. Where are you at on this team? Do you think it's quite as dire straits as it feels, or is this just May 21 and we're all really overreacting?
I think that there's some stuff to really be happy about. Like the starting pitching outside of Manoah is, you know, for a long time as a Jays fan, that five spot, you were like, man, we're going to have to really get lucky to win this game. Like some miracle is going to happen, have to happen for us to win a game with our fifth starter on the hill. And now it's Kikuchi. And I feel pretty confident with him pitching. Mm-hmm. Bassett's the number three. You got to feel good about that. Barrios looks like he's bouncing back to a certain extent, you know, like he's more to his norm. So, I mean, from a starting pitching standpoint, you know, I think, you know, if you can get Manoah somewhat figured out, you've got to like your starting five.
Do you like the defense, Sean?
I do. I mean, you know, I don't think Varsho, I mean, the outfield's amazing. And infield, I mean, yeah, I mean, the corners look great. And then Bichette as a shortstop, you'd like him to not be the shortstop, but that's where he's going to have to play positionally for you to sign him long-term. If you want him to be like a lifelong Blue Jay, he's going to have to be the shortstop. So you just have to live with that average defending at shortstop.
I'm kind of curious, Garth, on your thoughts, because of course it's really hard when a big trade is made to, as soon as things start going wrong in the season, to look back on that trade and be like, because the amount of people I've heard say, if only we had Lourdes Gurriel Jr., which is honestly something I never thought as a Blue Jays fan that I would hear. But is this team missing Teoscar and Lourdes right now? Is that part of the offensive problems? Or do you think that it's just an easy parallel to draw?
You can't look at those trades like individually. Like they, like we, we traded Teoscar for Swanson. And yes, Teoscar is a fan favorite, and we didn't get back equal value. But that money went to sign Kiermaier. And he's been, as like, as much as I hated Kevin Kiermaier, he's been great. He's been great for the Jays. The trade with Arizona, like, I don't care about how great Lourdes is doing. He scared the shit out of me every time a ball was hit to him. He took the worst routes in baseball. Like, he was horrible. And having Varsho out there, it's like, it's awesome. Would I like Varsho to hit a little more? Yeah. I think obviously, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
glad he's not.
I mean, you know, like, Lourdes goes on these hot and cold streaks. Like, Lourdes is on a heater right now. You know, give it 2 weeks, he could be ice cold again. Like, we've seen it for years as the Jays. The problem I had was with Moreno. Jen and I talked about it earlier this week where we were chatting, and like, you can go back in the long toss history and look at it. And Jen and I were both very adamant about keeping Moreno and trading Kirk last year before at the trade deadline. Like, we needed pitching. Kirk was an all-star. We could have got a lot back for a 23-year-old all-star catcher, like, who turned into a silver slugger. We could have got a ton for him last year. The issue I have with keeping Moreno is he's such a better athlete. And like, if he didn't work out at catcher, you could put him in the outfield. Like, he's fast. He's athletic. He's way more versatile with Kirk. I told Jen the other day, if Kirk isn't hitting 280 with some pop, he's useless. Like, he's, you know, he can't run the bases. You know, I just think that part of the trade was bad, but I don't miss Lourdes. I think, like, I just wish we could have traded Kirk instead of Moreno. But that trade, like, I'm still a Varsho believer. I think he's great. He, you know, he plays hard. He's amazing in the outfield. I just wish he could hit above 210.
And you know what? I do think that it is a little bit more of a glaring hole with Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk struggling, right? Like, we watch them be touted as two of the top 10 catchers in baseball. And this was not amongst Blue Jays fans. This was amongst Major League Baseball analysts, right? Yeah. So even with losing Moreno, it didn't feel like it would be quite as big a deal as we're seeing it is now. But again, I think it is. It feels like a bigger deal than it is I really do believe, like, Kirk will turn it around. And I'm curious, Jeremy, where you are at on Alejandro Kirk. Do you believe in this young man? And Danny Jansen is starting to already come out of his slump. Are you comfortable with this catching tandem?
I think he's respected, clearly. I mean, he obviously has I'm not sure if I specifically know of pitchers saying they want him in the game, but it seems to me like he is that kind of catcher where he can call a game. Like, there's more, obviously, so much that there's so much more than just the catcher catching in the game with what's happening in terms of, you know, calling so many different things, what kind of pitches, you know, where people need to be. I just think he's been touted as such a great catcher. And like, the guy was looking like he was a legend, you know, maybe a year ago, that everybody was like, this guy is unbelievable. But, you know, when you're 5'8 and 245 pounds, that's also, you know, very different for your typical baseball player. So when a person like that isn't performing like they should, then you have to look at the obvious, you know, like, he's not as athletic as other catchers in the league. So he needs to either get into better shape, so that's never an issue, or it doesn't become part of the conversation, or just, you know, find his guru, inner guru, and start just performing like he was before, just knocking the cover off the ball.
The inner guru, that is what we need at Alejandro. I know that Danny Jansen caught Alek Manoah, for the first time in over a year, actually, not since his 2021 debut, have we seen Jano catching Manoah. And I know that I'm grasping at straws for positivity here is what I'm doing, but there were some good things to take out of that Alek Manoah start. Would you agree with that, Jen? Do you feel better about Alek Manoah after that last start? Not that it was mind blowing at all.
I don't know that I feel better necessarily, because anybody struggling can have a good day. So I don't know if he just was having a good day and then it all falls apart again, or if there were genuine signs of improvement that can be carried forward. I don't know exactly where that performance sits. I think it was absolutely imperative to try him with Danny Jansen and give him a different look, give him a guy who could, you know, that veteran behind the plate who could really, you know, receive that ball and call the game and maybe take some of the pressure off of Manoah a little bit. I'm hopeful. I'm definitely hopeful that that was a step forward for Manoah. And I would imagine we see him with Jansen next time out again as well. But we'll see.
So I'm going to go to chat here because there is a lot of stuff to unpack. Scott Morneau says, if this season is a bust, are we at the point where blowing it up is an option? Now, I'm going to just step in here and say that I do feel this is a little bit of an overreaction for May 21, but it is an interesting question. He says, Biggio's a bust. Vlad is not the MVP we had hoped. Bo sucks at short. Maybe this is just not the team we need. Sean, thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's like anything. When you have a window and you have the personnel, you just have to keep going, right? Like, there is no alternative. It's like the Leafs, where it's like, we should have done this years ago. No. You were bad. You drafted well. How well did you draft? We don't know, right? We're just going to find out. But you just play it out. So for the Blue Jays, it's the same thing. We're like, you have these players. You have them under contract. You just let it play out. You know, that's it. I mean, that's the only alternative you have.
I have to agree with that. Like Garth, we're at least until the end of the Vlad Bo contracts before we start talking that, right?
Yeah, like, it's not like they're horrible players. And, like, how are we replacing them? People that are calling to blow it up, forget what it was like to watch baseball in the early 2000s. Like, those Jays teams were awful. Like, do you want to go back to that? Like we're still playing competitive ball. I don't want to go back to like the Lyle Overbay days, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like those teams were dog shit, man. Like
old Lyle Overbay. I mean, come on, Lyle.
And he was one of our better players.
Mm-hmm. So like Cassine days.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to go back to those days, man. Like, but I mean, like if we miss the playoffs, like, we are in a window of contention and they don't come around very often. I mean, true contention, like where we have players that if they're performing, like we could win a World Series. We don't have I've been a Jays fan for a very, very long time. And I said at the beginning of this year that I thought like this was basically our fourth real window of contention. Like we had the mid 80s, 85 through 87.
85,
You know, we were really good 85 through 87. And then we had the early 90s. We won a couple of championships. And then we had that long spell that people seem to want to go back to where we had nothing. And then we had the 15 and 16 teams that were super fun. And I'm not even sure the 15 and 16 teams were like, where I was like, yeah, this team could win a World Series. Like their pitching was like okay, but. So, I mean, for us to have a team that, like, on paper, if they played, like, the way they should, like, we're a good team. It's just, you know, after one bad week, you know, like, Twitter, social media, people lose their minds. But, I mean, in saying that, like, we've looked terrible this week.
Yes.
Like, it's not that, like, it's like, oh, it's a slump. Every team goes through it. Like, we have looked awful. We have looked disheartened. Like, you see the body language. Like, if we're missing Teo and Lourdes for one thing, it's the vibes. Like, even when they were losing last year, like, you still saw smiles in that dugout. You don't see smiles this year. You see head hanging. You see frustration. So, like, I don't know, man. Maybe they just need to, like, I don't know, the next road trip, go out and get drunk together and, like,
yeah,
have some fun. Fuck, go to a, I don't know, go to a theme park or some shit. I don't know, whatever. Do some team bonding, because, like, seriously, like, it seems like we need that camaraderie. But, yeah, like, as far as blowing it up, like, come on, man. Like, we have some players. We're not blowing it up.
The body language point is such a great point, dude. Like, this team looks disheveled out there. Like, they look like they're not having fun.
But don't forget, people didn't like that about the Jays in previous years where they were losing and drinking margaritas. People hated that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, what do you want?
Well, I mean, if we're going to lose, we might as well fucking drink margaritas, right? Like, I don't know.
Okay, so I know this wasn't in the show notes. This wasn't in the show notes. And we will get to maybe an infusion from within the system and bring
but
in somebody.
But just before you stop, like, yeah, just on that topic, that, you know, the one of the things is, like, these, you know, a lot of these players, I mean, especially the ones that are kids of superstars, you know, like, when they're losing, they're going to be more babies than somebody who, you know, had no idea of that kind of upbringing, not to say completely entitled, but just, like, you know, the winner kid wants to win all the time, and it doesn't take much for the winner kid to get pissed off and turn into a baby and not performing. Like, Vlad's fucking bat speed hasn't changed. Like, it's legendary. You know, there's things that about these guys that are, their numbers are incredible. So it's more of that. Just kind of get it together. Stop being a bunch of wussies and realize the talent here and get to work. Like, it's the grind that's being missed here. That grinding, when it's like, doesn't matter. You got to stay positive and just kind of keep crushing. That's what you see. The teams that are in the playoffs always are like the guys that are just grinding from the top to the bottom. It just looks like they're not concerned. You don't see emotion. You just see them just getting the job done.
You have a lot of insight into that, Jeremy, even though you're not an athlete. I mean, like I've been in bands, I've been on tours. You've been on, like, tours. And that shit gets, you know, it grinds you down.
Yeah.
You know, but you still have to perform. You still have to perform every night.
Yeah. You know? And full arenas after 6 months. It's easy to start thinking about laundry when you're playing the songs, you know, but it's the bands that are actually realize, like, my thing was like, maybe there's a drummer here that, like, is into watching me play drums. So I would try to find that frequency and just gun right to that. It was always, at least I'm drumming and I'm going to try and crush these fucking drums. Right. That's the only way through it. Otherwise, like, if you start thinking about, like, yeah, I've done this song 300 times in the last 6 months and I'm fucking sick of it. Like, it's very easy to go that way. And that's a good kind of lateral move to the same idea, which is just like, you're in a position, look where you are, wake up and just get after it.
And I hope that's the kind of thing being said on the plane ride to Tampa tonight, because, you know, Buck and Dan at the end of the game said, oh, that'll be a quiet plane ride. And I thought, no, I hope it's not a quiet plane ride. I hope, whether it's yelling, like, whether it's like anger energy or fun energy, there needs to be energy on that freaking plane. And I don't care in which direction it goes. Some of those veterans need to, you know, pull up and you know, help the rest of that team get it together on that plane tonight.
Yep.
Sean, how do you stay focused when you're playing stadiums?
it's really easy. The places I play, I just most of the people in the audience are yawning. Focusing on anybody who's not
young, as are most of the students in my classes.
Yeah, so
let's take it to the stage, Jen. You're ready. It's not like there's anyone that is in the minor leagues right now that is pushing hard enough for it to make obvious sense to bring them up. Now, Spencer Horwitz is having a good year. Davis Schneider is showing power that we haven't seen out of him before, and he's looking good as a second baseman, third baseman, left fielder, who's a right-handed bat. He's an option. They just brought up Otto Lopez with Espinal on the bench. Do you think, Sean, it is worth bringing up a guy as a roll of the dice at this point to maybe infuse some energy?
Well, how long is Espinal going to be gone for? I think they're optimistic, right? Like, he might not be
gone.
They
are optimistic, yes.
He's not on the IL yet, I don't think.
He's not, yeah, but
he was sort of starting. He was starting to hit, you know, like it's felt like he was coming around a little bit, Espinal, maybe.
It did, yes.
So I think he might, you know, like, I mean, he's injured, so I'm sure that he'll be ice cold when he comes back. Like, I wouldn't mind, you know, bring up somebody like Horowitz. Like, he's a left-handed bat, right? Infielder. Just bring him up and see what happens, right? Because last year it was like, oh, we're too right heavy. It's like, yeah, but you can't just bring in left for the sake of bringing in left. Like, if left can't hit, it's garbage, you know? So, like, and I mean, Belt is coming around. And
shots fired at Kevin Biggio.
Oh, man. How many times did we talk about that last year? Holy
Well, I mean, Biggio, I mean, what is Biggio? You know, like, we're not going to quit on you. Like, it looks like he quit on himself, folks. Look at what he's doing out there. What an eye. What a great eye. My God, he's got an eye. It's like, like, what an amazing eyeball he has. Like, man, does he know when a ball's a ball? God damn it, is he good? Oh, he struck out. Oh, the umpire was wrong again. You know, like, so how many, like, that's Kelvin Biggio, that's his whole career in a nutshell, is like, hey, that was a ball, but the umpire called it a strike. Oh.
There are about three players on this team that are hitting right now, and one of them is Brandon Belt. Now, obviously, he had a really tough start to the season, and he just did what Jeremy basically just said, right? He plowed it through, he kept with it, and he has brought his average up from what was an abysmal, like, .125 mid-April, and he's now hitting .250. He's got a couple bombs. You're seeing him go hitting those doubles in the gap. He had another one today that it looked like it was going out and just barely missed it. Are you, Jeremy, at this point, are you good with Brandon Belt? Like, do you feel like this was a good signing and maybe it is going to work out in the end?
Well, absolutely. Especially the fact that he's producing right now and others aren't. That's a spark plug right there. I mean, to be facing just a bunch of doldrums and going out there and performing on, you know, every time he has a chance, you know? So that's one of the only highlights that's happening. So absolutely, it was a great decision.
Garth, how about yourself, man? You a Brandon Belt believer?
I liked the signing when it happened. Like, he was coming off injury. And like, when people come off injuries, like, some people are Justin Verlander, who just goes out and wins a Cy Young after he has Tommy John. And some players like Matt Chapman take a little bit longer, you know? And like Belt, the two seasons before he got hurt, he was raking. Like, he was, you know, his OPS was like around 900. Like, he was hitting great out in San Fran. So I like the signing. And like, yeah, I talk shit on Twitter about him early in the season, but I mean, I didn't really mean it. Like, when I turn on a player, like, I never turned on Belt. Like, I just thought, like, he wasn't really getting a lot of opportunities early in the year, you know, like he wasn't playing every day or even every second day for the first 3 weeks or so. So, but now he's getting a little bit more playing time. Like, he's perfect for us. He's a great DH, plays, you know, a solid first base, left-handed. I like the signing. And I mean, I hope with his championship experience, like, he's one of those guys on the plane tonight that's like, hey, like, listen, like, I've been on some talented, talented teams. And honestly, like, I think the Jays have a more talented team than either of those Giants teams that won the World Series. You know, like, they were just like those teams that kind of figure it all out, you know, like they didn't have massive star players. They didn't have like that. And I think Belt is going to be an important dude going forward this season.
Belt was brought in for the playoffs. Yeah. I mean, obviously he's got to produce throughout the season, but truly I think his value is come playoff time and having that guy. And listen, there is some pushback from this. I know Imran here says, forget about this balanced lineup strategy. Belt and Varsho should not be hitting cleanup after being late on so many fastballs. And you know what? There's a reason why Varsho was moved down in the lineup. He is struggling, and he definitely hasn't been that guy in the cleanup spot that we've needed him to be. I mean, Brandon Belt's been there for 2 days. I don't think it's really fair to judge there. But, Jen, our next subject is the batting order. Who do you want to see hitting cleanup at this point?
Well, I just want to go back to Belt for one sec and just say, if you look, despite the lack of opportunity and the terrible start to the season that he had, his numbers are now close to his career norms, right? So he's made up quite a bit of ground very, very recently. So I definitely still feel quite optimistic about having him in this lineup and what he might be able to do for this team. Does he strike out too much? Absolutely. Like, his strikeout rate is utterly abysmal. He's in the, like, literally in the first percentile rankings on Baseball Savant. So that ain't good. But, you know, when you look at it overall, you know, like I said, if he can be at his career norms, maybe even a little bit better, if the other guys in the lineup can also get it going and have that trickle down effect, then I actually feel quite good about having him in the lineup. As for a batting order, I'd like to see maybe Guerrero or Chapman in that cleanup spot. I'd really like to see Kiermaier leading off. And I know others, on social media have said the same thing. You know, a lot has been made of having Kiermaier in the nine spot and then Springer in the leadoff, as if you have like two leadoff hitters, you know, Kiermaier feeding into Springer, but that only works if Springer's actually doing his leadoff thing. Right. Yes. So, and yes, he has been showing signs of life, but by and large, he's had a really disappointing season. Right. So I'd like to see something like Kiermaier, Bichette, Guerrero, Chapman and or Springer, something like that. And maybe have like Merrifield be the ninth guy to bring the lineup back up.
I really like that. Before we go to you, Jeremy, and just see what you feel about the batting order and how you would line it up if you had an opportunity to. I do want to just acknowledge right now the chat. Thank you so much. We've got 69 people watching right now. Hey, we did nice. It. Nobody joined, nobody leave. Go ahead and hit that like button. We really do appreciate it. If you are going to desperately need us to acknowledge your thing, of course, we will acknowledge Super Chat. So feel free to do that if you'd like. On to batting order. And Jeremy, where are you at on who you want to see leading off?
Very simple. Vlad, obviously, in the fourth spot, and whoever the fastest player that walks a lot is up first.
and that is, I mean, Kevin Kiermaier fits that mold. He really does. I will say, because there has been a lot of negativity about George Springer. He is 10 for 24 in his last 24 plate appearances. He is coming around. Maybe it hasn't been noticeable because the team has been such dog shit the last, you know, week, but he is coming around. Sean, when you look at this lineup, who would you like to see leading off, and where would you put Chapman in that order?
I just want to quickly say home runs are for buds. That's what buds do. No, just for fun. I just wanted to say that for fun. You know what I mean? Like, you know, throw it in there.
Just having a good time here.
No big deal. It's casual. You know, it's not nothing to do with money or anything like that. Like, I mean, at least we got rid of that. That's one thing I will say about how the season's gone. We have gotten rid of the shittiest ad read that they tried to blend into normal language that Shulman, wouldn't read. Dan Shulman, he obviously said,
Give it to Tabby Cat. Yeah.
I will never say home runs are for buds and that's what buds do. Dan Shulman said that. guaranteed. So then Buck Martinez, this poor guy, he's like stage four cancer. He has to do Budweiser ad reads. That's how we want this guy to go out, is just shilling for Budweiser. Home runs are for buds. That's what buds do. Oh, thanks, Buck. Like, good God, was that pathetic. The fact that the Blue Jays and Rod, the fact that Sportsnet thought that they could just blend that into a broadcast is just mind-blowing to me, that they thought they could just throw the, hey, we got rid of the jacket. Don't worry, Budweiser's on it. We lost the jacket. What can we replace the jacket with? How about like something that somebody will pay us $40 million a year to do? Like, that was just, made me sick. Like, so at least we're losing now, but nobody says home runs are for buds. That's what buds do.
That's little your Rogers, little Rogers marketing people, man. They'll come up with way worse for sure. It's coming that up. Is,
that was
give them the time. Most, give them time to write.
The first day I saw that, I was like, "No way they do that tomorrow." And then they did it, and I was like, "Are they insane? They think they can just throw this in our face?" And Budweiser's had a bad year. We all know that. Budweiser has had a tough year, and the Blue Jays are just, you know, whatever. What was the question? I forget.
Bad order, matter. Buddy.
It doesn't matter. I had it no doesn't insight. Matter. I had no it insight anyway.
Garth, how about you, buddy? Are you in desperate need of a lineup shakeup here, or do you care?
I mean, that's whenever you start doing that, like that's like last resort. That's like temporary. Like, yeah, it might work for a couple of games, but I mean, Springer's been a leadoff hitter his whole career, you know, going back to Houston. But I mean, I don't know, like, would it help or hurt him going down the lineup? You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure George is a big boy, and, you know, his ego could maybe handle it, but I don't know. Like, Kiermaier loves being the nine hitter. Like, he came into the season saying, I'm going to be the best number nine hitter in baseball this year. And he has. I mean, you kind of locked in with the top three with Springer, Bo, and Vlad. But I think I would try Chapman at four. I'd put him in, like, he's got power. Like, and he's got the launch angle for a cleanup hitter. You know, he's not hitting grounders. He's hitting fly balls. So if, you know, like, how many guys have we left on third base with less than two out? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, we need a guy that can hit a fly ball, a deep fly ball. And Chapman can do that. I think we put Chapman at four, probably Belt at five, then whatever, whoever's, you know, playing second is in there somewhere. But I think Chapman should be our cleanup hitter. I think that if I was going to make a change that lasted all year, that'd be the one.
I wouldn't mind, you know, Kiermaier is number one, because if you look at the impact that losing Teoscar and Lourdes has had is the length of our lineup. So I don't think there's anything wrong with just saying, okay, you know what, Kiermaier's one, and then maybe Springer's four, Springer's five, whoever's hitting, right? Like, because it has impacted the length of our lineup. And I know Kiermaier is still hitting ninth. He's still in the lineup, but I don't know. I wouldn't mind the idea of putting him at one and then having the lineup be a little longer.
Yeah.
One thing to be said about Kiermaier is his OPS has been the best out of any Blue Jay in May, which who would have guessed that? He continues to get on base. He profiles really nicely as a leadoff guy. And if we can lengthen the lineup, I'm all for it. And I'm kind of at this impasse where I'm like, I would love to see George Springer hitting cleanup. I see him as the perfect cleanup dude if it's not going to completely make him a miserable dick to be around and, you know, hurdy hurdy pouty pouty. You'd think he's a pro though.
I don't think that would bother. I think Springer has shown that he's a team dude. I don't think it would bother him.
He wants to win more than anything else, than he wants to hit leadoff.
Yeah. Yeah, like, would he rather, you know, another ring on his finger or batting, you know, leadoff for a team that doesn't make the playoffs? I don't think it matters to him.
Okay, going to chat here. Captain Camera Lock says, not worried about the bats. Pitching is where I lose sleep. I mean, we all can pick and choose where we have anxiety about this team, I guess. Starting pitching, though, has been pretty decent outside of Alek Manoah, right?
Yeah.
It has been pretty decent. I think the thing that is scary is that there's no six man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, who were we considering to be the next guy up if there was an injury?
The dream was that Zach Thompson would have worked out and would be killing it in AAA, but he has not.
Right.
Jen, the best starter in AAA, and we, Casey Lawrence right now.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, God bless Casey, but who wants that? Especially if it's for any significant length of time. And I've never wanted Mitch White to be an option, but he isn't even an option, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, even that ship right now has sailed. So I think that's the really scary part. And this is what I was harping on last year. How many times did I say they needed another starter, right? Because this is the exact reason why, without even foreseeing that somebody like Manoah might not have a good season, mm-hmm. just thinking potential injuries, you have to have a next man up, right? And that I think is the really scary part about the rotation.
I mean, I have taken shots at the Texas Rangers every chance that I have got since they went and spent all that money on every shortstop they could find. But truly, their pitching has been impressive. And we watched Jacob deGrom go down and Dane Dunning stepped up and has been literally incredible. And that is what this team lacks, is a Dane Dunning type. I never thought that I'd pine over a Dane Dunning type of pitcher. But here we are, right? A guy who can go into the bullpen, pitch with some length, come out, be a starter when needed. A Ross Stripling last year when Stripling was good, or the year before. Like, I know he is having big time struggles in San Francisco right now. But when you look at the bullpen, Jeremy, we'll go to you on this one. Where are you at on the bullpen? Are you confident in anyone outside of Romano and Swanson? And even I'd love for you to give us your confidence level in those two.
Well, I mean, obviously Romano, I think, is a great pitcher. I do feel that is a issue with the Jays right now, is their bullpen. You know, that's right. You know, if a starter's having a good game and then coming out and then the wheels kind of fall off in a sense, unless somebody's throwing nails, you know? So obviously, yes, I think that's a huge area where they should improve. Like, that's not something that they should try and rely on at this point. I think they need to make that a better part of their lineup, period, if they want to have any chance at the postseason.
Yeah.
John, Eric Swanson's been good.
Yeah.
What's that?
Eric Swanson? Oh, were you asking?
Yeah, Eric Swanson. Yeah, Sean. Sorry, Jeremy. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I didn't hear. My dog is barking upstairs and it's like.
My dogs are barking too. Well, we don't know. I think we all know what home runs are for, Scott. Buds. But no, I've liked Swanson. You know, I mean, obviously, when he's been overused, he's kind of melted down a little bit. But he's been sort of a stabilizing force in a bullpen. Maybe this is just me being like a layman fan. I don't understand enough. But it always seems like the thing that's bugged me about Atkins and Shapiro is they want to like nibble around the edges with the bullpen. Like, they want to bring people in who they have a funky little pitch, or that he doesn't reveal the pitch until he's, you know, he tops out at 92 or whatever. Yeah. Or you bring in Johnny Popcorn Anthony Bass, you know, like, guy. I mean, whatever. Like, he's been brutal this year. He's just
sitting. You need to get him out of here ASAP for sure.
Oh, yeah. Pick up the kernels underneath the seat of his career and toss them out the window of a plane. This guy is done.
Yeah,
Yeah, like Fox News plane and pick him up, please.
He's going to go to Japan where they have plenty of workers who pick up all the popcorn before it even hits the ground.
Truly, what has been something that constantly rings true when you look at the Tampa Bay Rays is that their sixth starter is just always ready within the minor leagues. They've always got a guy. I mean, we're watching Taj Bradley come up and act like
it's not even their sixth starter. It's their seventh, their eighth.
I know, man.
Like every year you look at their like list of injuries and it's like, it's ridiculous. And every year they win 90 games and they have Joe Schmo from wherever coming in. Oh yeah, he's a starter. He throws 98. Like they have a ton of them. Like, where are they finding these dudes, man?
I think if we knew, we'd already be within the old Rays organization. Yeah.
We should start looking under Anthony Bass's kids' seats.
Hey, can you?
Because that's where they might be.
So Scott Carter in chat says it's not that the starting rotation, there is no depth. There's just no depth anywhere. This team has been very healthy. How bad would they look if they had some bad tacos? And that is something that no one's really talking about here, right? Is the Blue Jays have been the healthiest team in the AL East.
Yeah.
Jen, does this concern you?
That's concerning. You know, we're talking about who might come up from the minor leagues to maybe inject some energy into this team. And we really don't have anyone to choose from. It's not like there, you know, are a couple of names where we're like, oh my goodness, I'd really like to see this guy get a chance, you know, da, 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 da. And it's the same thing with the starting pitching. It's the same thing with the bullpen. There really isn't, at this point, there really isn't help coming. And that's why, you know, when people want to completely freak out on social media and send Manoa down and da, 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 the next person up is not going to be any better at the moment. You know, I would argue the only reason you would send Manoa down is to try to get him right versus thinking that whoever's coming up is going to be better. Right. But that's the same at every position. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Let's just cross our fingers, I guess, and hope that the health continues. And maybe there are reinforcements at the trade deadline. I'd actually like to get an early jump on the trade market, to be quite frank. Yeah. I don't want to wait it out and be competing with everybody else who's also, you know, going in. I'd like to, if possible, see this team grab something useful before then and sort of set the tone, but we'll see.
And this is kind of another area of concern where you look at the minor league system.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know that they just released the top 100 and there's only one Blue Jay in the top 100 prospects currently. And obviously that can change quickly. And you look at the AA system and they do have some very good pitchers there. Semerl Burst looks really good. Chad Dallas has just been called up to AA and is absolutely on fire right now. So obviously as some of these players lower in the system continue to develop, this list could change in a hurry. However, it is concerning that the Jays right now look like a bottom 10 farm team. Garth, when you look at some of these other farm systems within the AL East, the fact the Jays are so low down on this list, it doesn't bode well. We really are. I know you kind of mentioned about we got to ride this out whether this core works or not, because there's not really anything coming up. And that's really what it looks like within this minor league system, right?
Yeah, I mean, like a couple of years ago, they were talking about how bad our farm system was, but it was because all of our young dudes were playing in the majors, you know, like, you know, Vlad and Bo and like those dudes were kids. They should have been playing AA and they were playing major leagues. So instead of taking advantage of that, we just haven't developed like younger guys like in the same capacity as like the Dodgers or the Rays. Like, you know, these organizations just like the Dodgers are always loaded in the major league, and but they don't look at their minor league system as just like a place where we could maybe replace a player. Like they look at it like, okay, when we're done with this player in the majors, we got a guy that's ready to go, you know? And we just, we look at our farm system differently. We have a different philosophy, and I don't know, like it's another thing that goes back to like, this is on Atkins, mm-hmm. you know, like this is a general manager's job is to build organizational depth. And he hasn't done that since he's been here. Like we've never had a really good farm system except for like that year that Vlad was in the minors, you know, like other than that, like it just, we just don't have it.
Well, I thought, I remember when like you're saying about three years ago, I thought that everybody was like, oh my God, the farm system for the Jays, look at these players that they got coming up. I thought that was a thing like 3 years ago. So I was wondering, I was like going to ask you guys like what's changed, because I thought that they were had a great farm system 3 years ago, and maybe that's an Anthopoulos thing or something like that in that regard, or he maybe had more
he emptied it,
yeah,
and for those runs, yeah, like in 15 said, and 16, like he, yeah, just got rid of everybody to,
yeah,
get like,
yeah, it's all been traded
and price, and yeah, like,
yeah, but I think that's what you're saying. Like they went with the, all those guys were young and they just went right to the team. It does make sense. And I think a place like LA, like literally, like they have the capital of baseball in San Diego for all these kids that are coming up anyway. I'm sure that their radar and their farm system there is just kind of already in place, having all these young teams. Literally, most of American baseball always ends up happening on the West Coast in terms of championships and the teams and the coaches and the summer leagues. And it's kind of those Southern West Coast teams. It's a lot easier to just kind of look out the window to see, you know, prospects that are 13, 14, 15 years old, as opposed to which is old school, you know,
like we are a rich organization. Why are we not spending on scouting? Like, I don't know. Like, it shouldn't be an excuse. Like, I can see it being an excuse for a team like Cincinnati or the Pirates or whatever. But like, our team, like, we have the second richest owner in baseball. We should be putting some resources towards that, so that when, you know, an Espinal goes down, we don't have to hope that Otto Lopez turns out to be an okay guy. You know, like.
Well, there's two ways to go about building a farm system, right? So one is, you know, excellent scouting and drafting and developing. That's one way. The other way is to do what the Rays did or do and trade away all of your best players before you have to pay them, which would mean trading away Vlad and Bo, for instance, before you have to pay them, right? And getting back top tier prospects. So those are the two ways to build a sustainable farm system. And right now, the Jays haven't done it either, right? Yeah. So, you know, once they traded away who they did have, this is where we're left.
And it's frustrating as an AL East fan, because you're looking at the Baltimore Orioles, who just swept this Toronto Blue Jays, and they have seven prospects in the top 100.
In fairness In fairness to like Atkins, I think that they've had a weird window, right? Where like, you know, Anthopoulos sold the farm to get those teams. And then sort of very quickly, we were a contender. Like very quickly, we were in buy mode again. Like it wasn't like we had, you know, it wasn't like Atkins and Shapiro came in and then we had like five down years after that run in the Anthopoulos era, where they could build it up. Like they really had like a 2 year window before they were like, we got to buy, let's surround these guys with some players. Like,
well, we never truly tanked. We never got those like number one, you know,
like draft the Orioles picks. Did.
Yeah. Like the Orioles. Yeah. Like if you lose 105 games every season, you're probably going to draft pretty high, you know, like, so that's how you get a Gunnar Henderson, you know, those types of guys. And we just never did, you know, like we got lucky because we just paid Vlad more than anybody else, because that's how you get, you know, that's how you get international prospects. You just have to pay them. So
It's still crazy that it's still crazy to me that baseball's drafting system is this porous. You know, like, it makes no sense to me at all that you can be like, oh, he slots in here, we're going to give him $1.2 million. Oh, we can only, the fact that you have, it makes no sense. Like, the NHL is terrible at everything except this. And it's not hard to have a tight drafting system where it's like 1 through 30, 1 through 32, boom, here's your guy. And then it's on TV, like, you know, like it becomes like a spectacle on television. Baseball isn't like that. Baseball is like missed the boat so terribly on drafting. It's unbelievable how bad it is.
Well, I think it's the guys that have the great systems. They don't want to mess with it, right? They think that they have the gold mine right in their backyard and they don't want to change that, right? All these certain teams like the Yankees just pay for it. But like the Dodgers and a lot of West Coast teams that have, it seems to be literally because they have such close knit to the younger leagues, you know?
That's such a funny and good point, though, Jeremy. Just like, you know, raise your hands if you want the drafting system changed. San Diego? No? Okay.
Yeah, right?
It makes no sense to me. It's like if the NHL was like, oh, well, there's this is really good Russian. Who's going to buy him? Like, what? Well, you know, they don't have a deal with Russia. Like, you know, you send scouts over to Russia and just buy them at 17 and 18. Like, it would be
at 15 ludicrous. Years old. Handshake deals at 13 years old with Russian hockey ludicrous. Players. Sure, just buy them. Yeah.
Any other sport on the planet would be like, that's ludicrous. That is ludicrous that your drafting system works that way. And in
even
baseball,
explaining like, out loud, even explaining out loud the free agent international posting system, it sounds made up. Right? You go to the Dominican Republic, you meet a 14-year-old, and then you sign him to more money than anyone else.
Just for example, like if the Dodgers or the Padres, like all of a sudden you have no bullpen and they had to find like five guys, all five of those guys would throw 98 plus.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna take a hard left turn here before we get to topics. Because I do wish to talk the Yankees. Obviously, they took care of business at the Rogers Center, beating the Jays 3 times out of the 4-game series. Tough to take as a Jays fan, but even harder because they were cheating and they were just straight up cheating. The confidence in which Domingo Germán cheated was really impressive to me because it was literally like, on his pants, the ump's like, oh yeah, that's the stickiest. He did it with such confidence that the ump felt his hand and was like, you know what, all three of you better come check this because maybe I'm going through some sort of weird stroke where everything's sticky. Like, there's no way he's actually
I feel like I'm touching Reese McGuire's hands.
Oh, why? God.
Why? Why, Sean?
And then just a couple days ago, Clark Schmidt gets busted with stuff on his hands. And rather than suspending him or booting him or anything, the umps just told him to go wash his hands.
I know.
Is this special treatment because it's the Yankees? Is this the Goldilocks balls all over again? Garth, how do you feel? And I know you're such a big fan of whenever a team cheats. Would love your thoughts on the Yankees.
All right. Here's my thoughts. Domingo Germán a couple of weeks ago was made to go wash his hands a couple times.
They didn't throw him out. That's worth stating. Two times he had to go wash his hands.
Yeah. And they didn't suspend him. They didn't kick him out of the game. I was under the assumption that MLB had banned sticky substances. That's what I thought. So if an umpire thinks that your hands are too sticky, you should be gone. You shouldn't be like, oh, just go wash your hands, sweetie. You know, like, no, you're gone. Like, the end of it. And like Domingo Germán, like I know there are bigger pieces of shit in baseball, but he's up there. Like, he's right there. Like, he's been he got suspended for beating his girlfriend. He was a PED user, so he got suspended for that. Now he's, you know, cheating with sticky stuff. Like,
and has been suspended for that finally after being busted three times. Like, he is going through a 10 game suspension.
The thing with Schmidt, like, the umpires were well aware that Herman was gone, and same team, and it's like, oh no, go wash your hands again. Like, no, like, if MLB needs to fix this, and like, I don't know if it is like they use balls that already have like some kind of tackiness to them, or just let them go back to using whatever they feel like using. But
and maybe that's the answer. Like, I'm with you, Garth. Like, that's what's so infuriating. It's like, why make a rule and then not enforce it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they are the ones that made such a big deal about the sticky stuff. Like, it wasn't even like some of the hitters did, like Donaldson and whatever. But I mean, pitchers weren't saying anything. Like, most hitters weren't saying anything. It was MLB. And for them to just be like, oh, you play for the Yankees? Here, just go wash your hands. And it's like, you know, like, how many chances do they get? Like, I have not seen another team have a pitcher be told that they cannot come back out until they go wash their hands. Just the Yankees. And it's happened twice.
What I love about this, too, is that Gerrit Cole obviously was using spider tack. One of the big reasons this whole thing happened was because Gerrit Cole was so blatant.
He broke down in tears when they said that he could, like, he literally was crying on stage. You know, when they asked him about it.
The clubhouse dude with the Angels, Bubba there, who took all the took all the shame and MLB's wrath, right? They fired him. This is this guy's fault. But Gerrit Cole, literally, like, there are text chains. There is proof that he literally had this guy making his special sauce for him, sending it to the Yankees clubhouse. He was sharing it with all the pitchers. So then when you hear all this rhetoric of like, oh, Clark Schmidt got busted too, like, how do they not know? It's like, what do you mean? How do they not know?
It's intentional.
It amongst all their pitchers.
Yes. It's intentional.
Well, I bet you at that level, the Yankees, for example, they're probably like, there's some hardline shit going on there where it's like, yeah, we're fucking cheating and this is how it is. And you have to abide by our cheating. Like, fucking literally, like, the Shulman, he's like, yeah, he just did it again. And he fucking ropes one into center field 440 feet. Like, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, it's something is clearly going on that's a different level than the cans getting smashed. Like, obviously, you know, like, and like they're probably fucking telling them, you got to do this.
The Yankees and Red Sox were both caught doing the same kind of the same thing that the Astros were doing. And they got nothing. Yeah. They got nothing. Yeah. It just got swept under the rug. But, the Astros were banging on garbage cans. The Yankees and Red Sox were both caught with like Apple Watches and all this shit. Like, I don't know. Is it just like, oh, well, they're the two biggest markets in baseball. They're allowed to and I know there's going to be all the Yankees fans that are going to come at me on Twitter and say, oh, you're just, you know, you hate the Yankees. Well, yeah, there's a fucking reason I hate them. Like, they cheat and they get away with it.
My favorite part about the pushback from Yankees fans is they're like, it's sour grapes. That it's like, is it sour grapes or do people just hate when your team cheats and it doesn't need to deal with any consequences?
Remember when Astros knocked out the Yankees? Like, you want to talk about sour grapes? like they still haven't got over 17, man. Like, they're still crying about it. Like, And they got caught the same year doing something similar. Like, I don't know, man. Like, that organization, like, and like last year with the Goldilocks balls for Judge, like, when is enough enough? Like, how much do they have to do? Like, are they going to start allowing the Yankees to hit off tees? Like, you know, come on.
Sean, anything to add?
I have always despised the Yankees and everything that they do. I mean, I think Boone is a piece of dog shit. Like, when he goes, he acts like he's the only guy that I see that goes out of the dugout and acts like he should have it changed. Like he stays out. He stays out there as if the call should change. It's like the call doesn't change, you fucking goof. Like, he's such a piece of shit. And then like last year, remember he was arguing balls and strikes with an umpire, and then he, in the press conference, he's like, "My guys are animals. They're animals." Like, it's like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Like, he knew it was a ball because he's an animal. Like, what do you mean? Like, I liked Boone as an analyst, but as a manager, like, he's just such a piece of shit. And I don't, and they, you know, they, I mean, I liked the fact that Herman didn't even say rosin. Like, he didn't even try to say it's rosin and my kids' tears or whatever. Like, he just was like, you know, he just stood there and just like, yeah, it's the stickiest thing you've ever touched. What are you going to do? But what are you supposed to say? What does that mean for other pitchers? Where it's like, if it's pretty sticky, we'll make you wash your hands. If it's the stickiest thing I've ever laid my hands on, you're out of the game. You might as well use spider tack then. You couldn't climb a fucking building with it.
No, but is that a thing? It's okay to have kind of sticky. Is that all right now?
You can have rosin. All right. Yeah. And rosin makes
it sticky. That's not sticky, though. That's not really that sticky. It's a little bit. I know I used to pitch with a rosin bag, and it's more a slight grip as opposed to like pine tar, which is like sticky.
Right. Yeah. I guess I've never touched either, so I really don't know. But my understanding is that it can sort of make sort of like a sticky powder, and if you have a lot of it or it really gets wet, it can actually kind of clump up.
That's nothing compared to pine tar, like where you touch it.
I'm sure that it's not
tacky, right?
But the part of the issue here is that these umpires are literally touching everybody's hands all game long, right? So they have to make a judgment call, and I'm leaving the Yankees aside for a second, right? They have to make a judgment call on how sticky are these hands, are they within the realm of you know, reality here as to how sticky we think they should or could be with rosin, right? And if we think it's a little overboard, we're going to tell them to go wash their hands. And, you know, it's a subjective thing, right? Like I think they're doing the best that they can for the most part, but it is still a subjective thing. And there is actually no way to quantify it. What I think, pardon?
Like I was going to say, there'd be no consistency. It's not like they have a sticky-o-meter, you know, where they can judge the stickiness. Like that's the issue I have.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing is the best that they can do at the moment is have these umpires use their best judgment, right? Like it's not like, for instance, with, you know, umpires calling balls and strikes, they do have a better option. They do have robot umps. They could actually eliminate the human element of the game there if they wanted to, right? Whereas judging how sticky somebody's hands are, unfortunately, is going to be a human element at this point. And we saw, what was it, with Scherzer? I believe it was right. And, you know, I feel pretty convinced he was only using rosin, but that's how sticky it actually got. So you have these like degrees, and at what point are you tossing a guy? Because that has big implications. So I just don't see how they can actually police this. As to whether or not there's Yankees bias, like honestly, whatever. I don't know. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. If there is bias towards certain teams and some guys are being given the benefit of the doubt over others, right? And it's sort of a calculated thing, at least at the major league level. That's a huge problem with all the gambling that's going on. Not that I think that there really should be gambling. That's a whole other topic and discussion. But the fact that they're making money off of gambling calls a lot of things into
question. I brought that up when we were talking about the Goldilocks balls with Judge's home run chase. I brought up the gambling aspect because that is MLB putting their thumb on the scale. Yeah. You know, like it's.
So wait, Garth, you're saying Aaron Judge having specific balls just for him is going to tip the scales?
Yes, I am. And I don't give a shit what Yankee fans think of that. But, like, we're going to have to hold, we're going to have to do, like, you're going to have me on one time during the week to talk about the sports gambling landscape, yeah, because like I'm working on a pretty in-depth piece for a group that I write for. And like some of the stuff I found out is just like, there are going to be class action lawsuits.
Thread of yours bookmarked, buddy. Like I've got a Twitter thread of yours bookmarked. Where you really got into the weeds on it. And
yeah. Well, like this article I'm writing is going to be way more in depth, and like the leagues and these gambling sites, they're just begging for major class action lawsuits against them, begging. And it's going to come. Like we just need a couple of lawyers with some balls and deep pockets to go at them. And like some of the stuff that's some of the research that's out there right now, it's like a slam dunk. Like, and for MLB to like, even just the sticky ball thing. And like, it's every, if you're going to have a, like an entry over the next, you know, couple of years per year, you have to have the levelest of the level playing fields, and they just don't right now. So
why don't they have an on-field hand washing station? You know what I mean? Wouldn't that make more sense? Like the ump just pumps one soap into your hand, and then he watches the pump. He watches the soap go into your hands, and then you do this, and then he goes, "Yeah, you're good." And then he rinses it off, dries it off, and he goes,
"But yeah, just put a sink on the mound."
One thing about the sticky hands, like I used to pitch and I used a rosin bag for years, and it's more about taking moisture out of your hands so you have more grip as opposed to adding a tact. So honestly, if you took a tissue and you pinch it and let go, it wouldn't stick to your fingers, but it would if you have pine tar or something. It's really something as simple as that. Anything that a tissue sticks to your fingers, that should be illegal. You know what I mean? And if that happens, what, like, it's like a roadside test for tactness.
Were you having,
it's very simple, but like if it sticks to your fingers, then you're out. Like that's too sticky, you know?
Reese McGuire's there at the tissue station for every pitcher.
Yeah. Like it's bring it freaking tip, step on it with your finger. And then if it's sticking, you're out, man. You're fucking gone.
All right, gang, we are already at the 90-minute mark of the show. So if everyone in chat here hasn't hit the like button, we would appreciate it. We're almost at 90 views or viewers right now.
Good following God. Along
on this very sad long toss with very little positive things to bring up. But we are going to shift to topics here. And of course, we do this every single long toss. Our panelists bring a topic that they want to talk about to the show. So we will get into it. Sean, do you want to start us off here, bud?
I was wondering about, when I'm on here, you will talk about sort of Guerrero's contract. I think we finally got some insight into, like, you know, this year, we finally got a little insight into, like, yeah, we have reached out to him. And then he said, yes, I want to stay long term, but I know my worth, right? So, like, to me, that's kind of stuck with me as, like, I know. So I guess I was wondering what people kind of thought of that, as if you've got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. saying, like, yes, I'm interested in a long-term deal. They have spoken to me about a long-term deal, but I know my worth. That tells me that they're kind of miles apart in terms of a dollar figure.
Jen, thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I've always maintained my belief that they won't end up signing Vlad or Bo long-term. And I don't think it's because there isn't mutual interest on both sides. I just genuinely believe that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will want to see what the free agent market has to offer him. I think he will be willing to bet on himself. And I don't think it matters what the Jays offer right now. We also know that the Jays notoriously stick pretty close to their valuations, right? They're not the kind of team that's going to go well over what they think a player is worth just to appease them or just to keep them. So I'm not surprised. I don't think it's going to get done. I really don't. Now, if Vlad continues to sort of Vlad was hitting what? I don't know what his, I know batting average is a terrible metric, but he.
He's hitting 295 after.
Yeah. So
after
he was hitting 311, I believe, yesterday, in going into yesterday's game. And I have to admit, it's the quietest 311 I've ever seen in my entire years of watching baseball. But you know, if he underperforms, you know, maybe his valuation, the Jays continue to value him even a little bit lower, right? Like, we can offer this now. I just don't see them landing on a number that they're both going to agree on. And he grew up with money. He is not needing the cash. He has, you know, a major league, a Hall of Fame dad who can advise him. And I just think all around, you know, it's going to be see what that free agent market has to offer you, particularly since the Jays haven't exactly, it's not like he's won a couple of championships with them, right? And he's like, I really want to stick around. That hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this isn't the Houston Astros. And I know, Jeremy, you kind of touched on this at the top of the show here, just with the bloodlines, right? Do you think that's going to affect Toronto's ability to sign Vlad and to an extent Bo as well?
Absolutely, because they're going to look at the options in front of them, because, you know, they, but if they start winning and get together as a group, that can change everything. You know, that would change. They're like, well, let's forget, not worry about, let's, this is the team that we thought we were. And, you know, they still are very close. And I think if they can start winning games, that cures all those issues. I mean, if they're coming into the end of June, 10 games over 500 or something, and actually doing what we thought that they would be doing at that point, then they'll probably just be happy to stick around because they want to win championships. And if this team, you know, does a run towards the playoffs and actually has a chance, then that would be the case. But otherwise, they're going to look at all those options because they're expecting the best for themselves. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we talked body language off the top as well, and just how downtrodden this team is exuding itself while on the field. Winning is fun, right? Like, whenever you talk about clubhouse culture and people are like, oh, it's got a bad culture, you never hear people talk about a bad culture with a winning team, right?
No, zero.
Winning's fun. but it is an interesting thought here. I know Scott Carter kind of gets to it here in the chat, and he says they will have to trade both at the end of 24 if there is no extension plausible. Sean,
absolutely,
that's something that this front office has the, well, for lack of a better term, balls to do.
I think that they've gone down every road. I actually don't think they're that tight. Like, you know, they went beyond what the Mets were willing to give Springer. Like, they're willing to go above and beyond Ryu. Like, they're willing to give more than market value to a free agent. They're willing to pay that sort of Canadian tax or whatever people don't like going across the border,
as long as it's not from within the system.
I wouldn't be surprised if the offer that they've given Guerrero would make us go, whoa, he didn't sign that. You know, like, I feel like we'd be surprised at how much money it was for. And my worry with him would be that he's thinking it's going to be like, you know, north of Judge, kind of like crazy central, you know. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, but
because the way that I look at right now, like, if we have Bo for another whatever, three seasons, right, these are going to be the best years of his career. You know, if you're playing Rays ball, you have him for the three best years of his career. If he walks at the end and you trade him at the end of that's Rays baseball. That's who we look up to. That's who we talk about. That's who people talk about all the time. That's how the Rays would do it. You would have him for the best 3 years of his career going forward, and then you would cut ties and he'd be gone.
You cannot lose those two guys for nothing.
No, you have to trade them for value return.
If those guys walk, like, for nothing, that's going to set this franchise back like 5 years.
And they won't. Like, yeah, they won't do that.
No, they have to. Like, they'll have to, when, if they're getting close and they're just far apart, like going into that last year or even going into the last 2 years, because like, what kind of trade value are you going to get for Vlad for 3 months? You know, like, if you can get a full season in 3 months, you're going to get way more. So like, you're going to have to go into like those last two seasons of Bo and Vlad and really, really work on a contract. And if there's no light at the end of the tunnel, you have to trade them. You have to. You cannot let them walk away for nothing.
And that's what's interesting, yeah, because right now you look at their window of contention, and I feel like it really does line up very similarly to when Bo and Vlad are going to be free agents in 2026. George Springer only has another 3.5 years. So he's here 1 year longer than Bo and Vlad. So really that contention window, even though it looks like 2.5 years, if those guys aren't signing, it truly could be a year and a half. Now, obviously this team's going to play it out. I know there's people in chat right now saying they need to rebuild. That's not happening at least for a year and a half. But Garth, do you see it as a possibility?
Of what? Like blowing it up?
Well, you just stated that like they have to get something for them. Do you think this front office has the fortitude to get those deals done if they have to? Yeah.
I think so. Like they're not stupid. Shapiro's not an idiot.
No,
like he knows that like if you know they're $80 million away on a contract, like, and there's no way that he can go higher. They're gone. They have to be. Like Mark Shapiro's job isn't a part of his job is to appease Bo and Vladdy, but that's not his main job. Is the health of this organization, top to bottom, and to lose two guys like that for nothing, like that, that's how he would lose his job. Like if they don't make the playoffs this year, Shapiro is safe. If Vlad and Bo walk away for nothing, he'll lose his job over that.
I can't see him unless they, anyways, I agree 100% with you, Garth. Who knows if Atkins has a job by that point, but yes, agreed. Jen, would love to hear your topic for the show today. I know you probably have a couple for us to choose from.
If home runs are for buds, because that's what buds do, what are bunts for?
Bunts?
Stella Artois.
I'm kidding.
What are bunts for?
They're for Molson Canadian, because that's what Molson Canadians do.
My topic today... So looking at this team, and it doesn't have to be looking at just the bullpen or just the starting pitching, you can actually name players if you want to. What's the one thing that you think will definitely turn around? In other words, we'll definitely see positive regression on. And what's the one thing that you think won't turn around and really needs to be sort of the first thing addressed by this team?
I'd love to jump in here and take the lead, and then we can go around the panel here. But I think personally, this offense is going to rebound. It is in a horrible slump and it has been absolutely disgusting, but so many of these guys have a proven track record. So many of these guys have gone through stuff like this before and come out the other end. And I do believe that we'll look back mid-June and be like, I can't believe we were that worried about the offense. I can't see pitching depth getting better. I that's the one element of that question that I look at what the Jays have when it comes to starting pitching depth. It's not pretty. You look at what they've got for bullpen depth, and yes, there are some much better options bullpen wise, but a lot of these guys like Hagen Danner and Troy Watson, both of these guys throw 100. Troy Watson actually is hitting 103 on the radar gun and has been the closer in New Hampshire, but they're also in Double A, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of their best prospects and options are in Double A. So this is a problem that I do feel will fix itself, but not till next year, which by then it's too late. Would love to hear what you think, Jeremy, on Jen's question there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bullpen for sure, what needs to be addressed and getting, you know, more depth there. Obviously, another pitcher wouldn't kill us. It just in terms for that number six idea, right? Like to have pitching is the only thing that's going to get you into the postseason. So there's zero shortages of batting or, you know, opportunity for this lineup to produce runs. So it really is a pitching issue. That's kind of what needs to happen if they want to have a good run this year into the playoffs. And other than that, I think it's because again, if they do that, then that keeps Bo and Vlad happy, and that keeps the whole camp really. If they can produce and maybe have, you know, better longevity throughout the games, they have to look to bullpen and strengthening that side of the game.
John, when you look at this Toronto Blue Jays club as it is right now, May 21st, what are you fairly confident is going to recover and we're going to see some gains? And what, in your opinion, is a problem that's just not going to wind up getting fixed?
I have a feeling Manoah will find it, you know, like, and then, so I feel like, you know, then you've got a starting five that can kind of go against anybody. So I think Manoah's going to find it. I don't think he's just going to have like a down year. You know, I think he's going to sort of find it and then you'll have sort of a really good starting five. I don't, as far as offensively. Yeah. I mean, you know, for years of like Rowdy Tellez, get him out of here, he's too streaky. Lourdes Gurriel, get him out of here, he's too streaky. Teoscar, get him out of here, he's too streaky. Guess what? All our players are streaky. They all are.
Baseball players are streaky.
Like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a streaky hitter. So is Bo Bichette. So is Brandon Belt. So is Matt Chapman. Every one of these guys is streaky. So when we got rid of those guys, we just got rid of guys who can occasionally carry your lineup offensively, and we didn't replace them with guys who can occasionally carry your lineup. Dalton Varsho did not come in and occasionally carry our lineup offensively, you know? So, I mean, it's an adjustment period offensively. Like, we're going through a period where it's like, oh, we usually have two guys that are hot and we're winning some ball games. And now when you're a little bit more reliant on guys who are just maybe, because I think that's what they were trying to get away from, right? They were trying to get away from like these streaky guys who are like either crazy good or crazy bad and have somebody who's maybe a little more down the middle. And so Dalton Varsho is really the main driver for me. Like, if he can get it together, then, you know, our lineup looks pretty good, but it's going to come down to him. He's a big piece of it. So, and I think he's got it because I don't know him that well. So, like, I would say I have more faith in Manoah giving us a great starting five than I would in Varsho, like, kind of giving us some of the offense we've seen in previous years.
So, friend of the show, regular on Long Toss here. Hey, Commie, Joel is in the chat, and he says, Jen, bunts are for our cleanup hitter.
That's what cleanup hitters do.
Garth, how about yourself, man? You want to jump in here?
I think the thing that's gonna change, and it has to, is hitting with runners in scoring position. Like, we've been dog shit all year, even when we were winning games. Like, you know, we need to cash in runs. Like, when they're just sitting there waiting to come in, you know, like, I think it's gonna turn around. We need like one of those series like last year where we just like laid the lumber to the Red Sox, you know, like we need one of those series. Mm-hmm. And after that,
open it's the just, floodgates.
Yes. Yes. And it did. As far as something that I don't think is going to happen. Like it's the bullpen. Like we have guys that are really good, but not when we ask too much of them. Like, I love Yimi Garcia. Like, I think Yimi Garcia is a great pitcher, but when he pitches 2 days in a row, like, I know he's getting hammered that second day. I know it. But like, if you give him his, you know, the proper rest, he's great. But like, Jen and I mentioned it even like a few times, like we need a dude that comes in and throws heat. Like, I love bringing in Pearson, you know, like didn't Romano used to hit 100? Like, mm-hmm. We don't see that anymore, you know, like 97, 98 with the, you know, and he relies on his slider now. Like, I want a guy that comes in and is like, I throw 103 and I don't give a shit if my slider's off. I'll just keep throwing 103 because you're not hitting it. You know, like we need a Felix Bautista. We need a dude like that, you know, like, and I know they don't grow on trees. I'm well aware. Like if they did, everyone's bullpen would be full of guys that, you know, full of Felix Bautistas. But man, like even like when we played the Pirates, like it seemed like they had like three guys in their bullpen that just threw heat. And it's like, if the Pirates can have it, like what the hell's wrong with us?
So well, the story is always the same, Garth. It drives me nuts. It's like, oh, Baltimore found this guy in Cuba. He was playing in Argentina, and he lowered his arm slot, and now he's the best pitcher in baseball.
Well,
and
how about today? Today, for example, they had fucking 12 hits on. They only got three runs. How does that make any sense?
Yeah. It makes no sense.
So that's how those are mine. Like I think. Runners in scoring position, we're going to get better because we have to. And we can't get too much worse. And then bullpen, you know, like that needs to be addressed. Like I'd be on the horn with the Royals, with the White Sox. Like those are teams that have some dudes in their bullpen and they're going nowhere this year. So like, why wait till July? We know what we need. We know what we need. We know what this team needs. And like we're just like five idiots talking on a podcast. Like,
and it's going to be expensive. They know what they mean. It's going to be expensive at the deadline. So like, if it's going to be expensive now, it's expensive either way. So let's bolster this team while we can.
It's always expensive for good players. Like, you know, it costs what it costs. And if we want to win, like we need a couple of dudes in that bullpen.
Well, and if it can win some games between now and the All-Star break, right? Between the trade deadline, then you have to set that market now, right? You cannot be competing at the trade deadline with all of these other teams that are also going to be buyers. There are too many buyers, you know? So you've got to go out and do that early, hopefully. I would absolutely like to see another flamethrower in there. I think Varsho is going to turn it around. And I actually, opposite of Sean, I have more confidence in Varsho turning it around than I do in Manoah right now, only because of how lost Manoah has looked, right? So deeply lost. And I think if Varsho can kind of turn it around, you know, I think that offense can get clicking and it should get clicking at some point. I know it's weird to be worried about, you know, your bench players, but our bench players aren't particularly good. And you know, it would be lovely to have somebody who can come off the bench and actually provide some value, but I'm not going to worry about that bench piece in the grand scheme of things at the moment. But yeah, absolutely. Go out and get yourself someone from their bullpen. Like, now, as soon as possible.
I just can't believe they seem to be in this spot every year.
Yeah.
Well, like, our bullpen doesn't look really good. Oh, well, we just go and acquire some, knowing that the premium that you pay in prospects is huge. Like, I know you guys are saying like, we should go out and get it now, but every seller who's a GM who's on the phone is going to say to Atkins, like, sure, if you give me more than I would have gotten at the deadline, I'll do the deal now. And then he gets to decide what he would have gotten at the deadline when the price was juiced by having more buyers in the marketplace. Like last year when did we get Simber and Richardson last year? Or was it the year before?
Year before.
2021.
Yeah, it cost us a fortune for like a guy who, you know, it cost like neither one of those guys is a flamethrower and it cost us a fortune.
But that's and unfortunately the position like, boy, that they put themselves in.
Yeah. But why do they put themselves in this position every year? Seemingly there's never a primary focus on like, what are we going to do in free agency? And Atkins says, bullpen, bullpen, bullpen. We are all in. We're comfortable with our team. We are going crazy on our bullpen. We're remaking the whole thing.
I think
hasn't changed since 2015. Like that's the same problem then. And we're still in the same boat.
And when it comes to relievers, it's such a double-sided sword, you know, because when it comes to the playoffs, the most important thing to most winning teams is the bullpen. And you watched it happen last year with Houston. You watched it with Philadelphia. And at the same time, though, you're now they paid all this money for Rafael Montero to keep him in Houston, and he has been pedestrian at best. And like relievers are year to year, but even so, when they have a good year, look at how much they gave up for Eric Swanson. Like I know Teoscar only had 1 year left, but they gave up a middle of the order bat for a season. And the price is just going to be more now. So it might be tough to swallow, but I'm with you. I am on board with we should do something now rather than at the deadline, because it's going to be expensive either way. So we might as well get the added benefit of more wins before the deadline.
But if you don't like our farm system now, wait till we're done dealing for bullpen pieces.
That's very true. You don't like our farm system now, wait till we trade some away. All right. Before we get to you, Jeremy, and your topic, we'll shed a little positivity here. Matthew Silver in chat says it's always darkest before the dawn. Obviously a overused quote, but it does apply here. So fingers crossed the Jays do come out of this. Jeremy, would love to hear where you're going with this, buddy.
I'm going to my topic will be fun time. Today I'm going to show you guys some cool stuff. How about that?
Awesome. Do it.
Here's my game used bat collection. We got the little 35 on the knob. It's got a crack, and as we go along here, we can see this is a Frank Thomas.
Hey, amazing. The big hurt, love it.
Yeah, a Frank Thomas there. We got, and now we got
show and tell.
Another classic. We got we're going to show you the knob. It's the number one. Any guesses? Most famous.
If that's a Tony Fernandez, I'm robbing you.
I said no. It's actually it's a bit more of the number one. It's the Ozzie Smith.
Oh man!
Yeah, that's why I said the most popular number one, right? The backflipper, Ozzie Smith. And here's another good one. It's an older one with the Pirates 25. It's a Barry Bonds bat. It's actually it's actually signed, but it's
beautiful.
Yeah. I'm still
gonna rob you.
But here's the piece de resistance is the 34 on the knob, Kirby Puckett.
Kirby, wow.
Yeah, it's look actually kind of small. You'd be surprised. It's thick, but kind of small. But yeah, those are. I got those back in the 90s, you know, on tour. Just I had a friend of mine, Dave Bushing. He was a bat collector, and like I just started collecting game used stuff. Just started collecting them, and they were only, you know, like $300-$400 back then. Now they're obviously worth a lot more.
Wonder how much are those bats? I wonder if those bats are like way heavier than like modern bats. Like, are they this, you know?
They're they are a little bit, maybe, but they're, I don't know. There's some pretty big bats now. I mean, they're the interesting, like the Frank Thomas, for example, is very thick in the barrel, but it's really thin in the handle. So I don't know. And they're probably getting, they're drying out probably with age. So they might not be as heavy as they were, but I guess they're treated. So probably the same, but
kind of fun. Do you ever hit with them? Do you ever like go out and
no,
I would have to.
Yeah, I'm just going to take this $5,000 Ozzie Smith bat out to the park.
Sean's out there laying down bunts.
I drink too much to not do that.
Mind you, at the coolest thing I ever had was Nolan Ryan, a home Astros 1973 jersey when he got the strikeout record, the 373. And I actually wore that to play catch once. but I sold it.
I loved Frank Thomas on the Jays so much.
End of his career. I love the Frank Thomas commercial, the one where he like killed a kid with a pillow.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Oh man,
I was just a joke with my brother that Frank Thomas just hit home runs because he didn't like to run, because he had the same jog whether it was a single or the long ball, and those were the only things he hit: singles and home runs. And it was a beautiful thing. All right, we're gonna wrap things up with your topic here, Garth. Hit us with it.
I also have a very fun topic. because my pal Jeremy's on the show today, who was in a very popular band in the 90s. But there were a lot of really great bands in the 90s that never really got their due, never made it anywhere, but were still like, they're still some of my all-time favorite bands. I saw them a bunch of times back in the day. I remember seeing you, Jeremy, right when Hope came out, your first video. I saw you play at the Princess Theater in Sault Ste. Marie. It held about 800 people, and there were about 30 people there. And it looked cavernous, but you guys fucking killed it. And I was sold after that. I was like, these guys are awesome.
Wow, so cool.
I wore a shirt of one of my favorite 90s Canadian bands that no one really knows about. And I don't know. It's a band called Sucker Punch. And do you remember them, Jeremy, at all?
Yes. Like I remember them. I can't remember.
They were kind of like a surf rock kind of band. Like they had a really like a surf feel to them. But I just want to ask you guys, like, what is your favorite band that no one else really knows about? You know, like that hidden gem that people should know about.
You too. I'm trying to think. There's this.
You mean that band that fucked up my iPhone?
I'm trying to think of, like, there's this Canadian band I like, but I can't remember the name of it. I'm gonna look it up. You guys go ahead, Scott. It's your turn.
Jen, you want to hop in?
I'm racking my brain right now.
Well, I have one. I got Change of Heart is a great band that not Ian enough Gordon people know.
Is a god.
Yeah, Change of Heart should have got more recognition, I think.
Yeah, I saw them. I saw them play when they were on tour with The Hip. They did that like big cross Canada with The Hip, and I actually got to meet Ian after the show, and like we're still kind of online.
He's a great guy.
He is one of the nicest, hardest working musicians I've ever seen. I love Ian Blurt. He's amazing.
Yes, everything he does is incredible. He's an incredible musician.
Yeah, he was in a band with a buddy I went to high school with. I forget what they were called, but Ryan Gassie was a drummer. He lives in Toronto now, but we grew up together in the Sioux. And Ian was in a band with him as well. And like literally every project he works on is just awesome. So I can wholeheartedly agree with you there, Jeremy.
So I worked in radio for years at the beginning of the 2000s and was the guy they'd always send out to intro bands and stuff like that. You know, I was the young kid that they could send out and not pay. And I was just like, I can't believe I'm here.
Right? I get a meal.
A meal. I can't wait to do comedy. I remember the Waking Eyes came to Grand Prairie when I was doing radio there, and I know they had a little bit of success, but they were such a fun band and they put on such a great live show that I kind of fell in love with them. And yeah, they're kind of the underrated Canadian band that I kind of really enjoyed when they were still making music.
They were one of those bands that everybody thought was going to be the next big thing, and it didn't happen. Truly. I remember that. That's true.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Matt Mays, too. I know that that's kind of not the...
everyone knows Matt Mays, yeah.
Everyone knows who Matt Mays is, but yeah. How about you, Sean? You got something yet?
I don't know. I can't think of anybody.
Jen?
I'm going to make an embarrassing confession, which is that when I was in high school in the 90s, growing up where I did, I was not really into rock music, independent music. I listened to way too many dance beats. right? Like just and
Chris Shepherd?
Yes.
Chris Shepherd here.
And I regret that because I know a lot of really fantastic music and bands just passed me by, right? And I did not you know, get a chance to maybe experience them or anything like that. And I feel like I've been trying to do a little bit of catch up in my 30s and 40s, but you know, you can never truly catch up. And if you weren't sort of there to experience it. So, you know, folks, if you have Twitter, feel free to DM me your music selections.
I'm sending you a playlist.
Yeah, please do. Like, absolutely. Make me a playlist. You can make it on Spotify and share it with me, like anything, okay. Because I really do want to try to recapture that part of my teenage years that I missed out on.
In the 90s, Jen was too busy stealing Monica Newell's style.
So we have to go to chat here. We have to go to chat because there's so many good ones being mentioned here. Scott Carter says, is 3 inches of blood obscure? I think we can count it. Taco Time says fur packed action.
Never heard of that one.
Jason Austin says The Watchmen, who of course,
oh, I love The Watchmen.
That's not obscure.
Yeah. I've heard of them.
Michelle Marie says Tuck and Patty, amazing jazz duo, not Canadian. Jason Pepper says Tokyo. Huh? Jason Austin, Pirate Radio. There you go.
One more of my favorites, and I know Jeremy will know them, was 13 Engines. I love 13 Engines. Perpetual Motion Machine is still one of my 10 favorite albums of all time. Absolutely love it.
Great band. My older brother's favorite band when I was younger, for sure. Hey, look, yeah. I just realized there's also a Rawlings mark in this Barry Bonds bat. Look at that.
Nice. Oh, that was before just they were manipulating the balls. Yes. Yeah.
And some serious pine tar still on this thing. Look at that.
That is so damn cool, dude.
It's one of those Cy Young bats. They're great. They're the Young Bat Company. Remember those guys?
Yeah. All right, let's wrap it up here. Honestly, all four of you, thank you very, very much. Really appreciate it. Jeremy, I know it's your first time on, but we sure enjoyed this, and hopefully we can twist your arm and have you back. Do you have anything you want to plug here before we get out of here?
No, just Taggart and Torrens podcast. You can get it everywhere at iTunes or Spotify or whatever else. And yeah, thanks for having me on. Be happy to come back at some point.
We will hit you up. Sean, again, a pleasure always, my friend. Anything you want? I know asking you to plug anything is ridiculous.
I'm not plugging anything. I just want to say touch them all, Joe. They're for buds. that's what champions do. That's how that call should have gone. You know what I mean? Like if we go back, I bet Rogers wishes they could go back in time and change all the famous play calls. Add, drop Budweiser. Touch them all, Joe. They're for buds.
And hand them one at home, please. Kick off the celebration.
Place hit. Blue Jays win the East. Let's crack open a couple buds.
Did you guys ever see that clip when they got Joe Carter together with the pitcher? And they went bowling and Joe Carter dusted him at bowling too.
That's great.
That was pretty good. I remember seeing that.
Poor Mitch Williams. Oh, man.
All right, Jen, a pleasure as always. Garth, a pleasure as always. Both of you are obviously Blue Jays Twitter darlings if you want to plug your handle here.
I'm at baseball_Jen. That's Jen with two N's. And I just want to thank everybody. This was, after some abysmal baseball, this was a really fun episode regardless. So kudos
it
to all of
like
you.
It felt like therapy almost. It was nice. I feel lighter.
This was good.
It was.
DM Jen music, everybody. There you go.
Please do.
And Garth, honestly, always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate you twisting Jeremy's arm to get him on the show.
For sure.
For everyone wanting to follow you on Twitter, how do they do so?
Yeah, you can follow me at Garth Orgy. And if you're into vintage t-shirts, I'm going to be posting a lot more on my No Hope Vintage Twitter feed. Just got the shop open. I redid a 1962 family traveler camper. And turned it into a really fun vintage clothing shop on my front lawn. So
awesome. That's cool, man. Mm.
Garth is being too modest too, because he has put a ton of work into doing this. And I know how much you, over the last year, have been accumulating these vintage items, and it's just really, really cool. So watch for that, everybody, because it is.
Yeah, and very, if you're ever in Batchewana Bay, Ontario, about 40 minutes north of the Sioux, pop in. Store's always open. I run it on the honor system. So you can leave money in the bowl or e-transfer me or whatever. So yeah, open 24/7.
Amazing. Right on. That has been episode 208 of Long Toss. Thank you to everyone in the chat. We really appreciate it. All the grounds crew, Sean, Jen, Jeremy, and Garth. Always a pleasure. That is it. Adam, who normally would wrap things up and hit end here, isn't around, so I need to text him to do that. So I'm just going to cold end this here, and all the best to all of you.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.